20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Happy Friday, Packers fans. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast, appropriately named. Thank you so much for finding us today. If this is your first time here, appreciate you checking it out. Hope you enjoy all things Green Bay Packers 365 days a year, because if you do, you have come to the right place. We've got a new show for you every single freaking day. If you've been here before, thanks so much for coming back and joining us today. Always appreciate that as well. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. And if you haven't yet, check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships. New members-only video. Ross Uglum did a pretty fun breakdown of grading the Packers draft, not based on anything of any merit, but based off jersey number. It's a pretty fun listen, so you can check that out as well. All right, we've got a lot to go over today, and we're going to go over Baron Sorrell in just a moment. Somebody that is, I know, much talked about. The entire, you know, day three scenario where he was at the draft and the emotional interview and just all of it. He's already sort of a cult hero and a Lambo legend and everything else just based on that entire situation. But there's a lot of fun stuff about his game as well. So we'll get into that in just a moment. Let's start though with Quay Walker. Yesterday was the deadline to pick up a fifth year option on players. And we know that they already picked it up on Devontae Wyatt, but the question was going to be what would happen with Quay Walker. And we talked about it a little bit yesterday in that it wasn't likely that that fifth year option was going to get picked up because of the exorbitant cost for off-ball linebackers, because they're combined with outside linebackers in a 3-4. And it just gets relatively messy very quick when it comes to probably having to overpay on a fifth year option fully guaranteed for Quay Walker. Now, we heard from Brian Gutekunst previously that his expectation is that Quay Walker is going to be a Green Bay Packer in 2026 and that they're going to continue to work towards a long-term extension, or at least an extension in some capacity. And with that being said, that could just be a one-year sort of compromise situation. But what we now know is that it will for sure not be the fifth-year option. Just because we expected it doesn't necessarily mean that that was going to be the case. We've seen them pick up the fifth-year option on Darnell Savage when that was one I didn't know that they would go with. But, you know, they did. And in this time, they did not. So Quay Walker, as of right now, would be an unrestricted free agent in 2026. Devontae Wyatt, fifth-year option picked up. He will not be an unrestricted free agent until 2027. I believe, Goody, I think they'll work something out. It's not an urgent matter by any stretch. They can let Quay play out this season. There's risk-reward on both sides. For Green Bay, there were signs last year that in the second half of the year, Quay was ready to break out. If that was the sign or a harbinger of things to come, now would be the time to sign him. Because if he breaks out even more and he continues that breakout and shows that consistently in 2025, his price is going to go significantly up. On the flip side, if that was a fluke, and if sort of you get this regression on Quay and he just kind of is what he is and it doesn't really lead anywhere and you're left underwhelmed, you're going to be happy that you didn't do that deal and that price goes down, and then you kind of revisit it towards the end of the year if you want to bring him back or not. And then from Quay's side of things, if you want to bet on yourself and you know, hey, what I showed at the end of last year, that's the for real me. Now I'm about to go show the world that I'm one of the best linebackers in the league, then you probably want to play it out. But if there's any uncertainty or if you're worried about injuries, and knowing that, hey, if it doesn't work out, you're going to potentially get paid less later than you would now, there's a balance there as well. So a little bit of risk reward on both sides. We'll see if they're able to compromise, get some sort of deal done. But if not, Quay Walker will go into 2026 as a unrestricted free agent, along with a lot of other Green Bay Packers. They could be swimming in comp picks. Unfortunately, you can only get four, but there are multiple players who theoretically should get comp picks if they leave Green Bay. Quay Walker would be one of them. All right. Albert Breer, meanwhile, stated in his, I think it was like a Monday morning quarterback sort of column, was asked about the Jair situation. And he basically said he thinks the most likely scenario is that there's a compromise and Jair is back on the team in 2025. He was smart enough not to give a percentage chance, but I digress. So I don't know if this was a reported thing from Albert Breer. this is not me doubting Albert Breer, but I'm just saying, usually when you have some sort of sourced or anything, you're going to say, per a source, I've heard that the most likely outcome is this. It more felt like deductive reasoning of, all right, Jair is not sought after in the trade market right now. Green Bay wants something in return. They're not going to give him up for free. They don't want to release him. Jair is wanting to get paid. And if he isn't, you know, going to get traded, then he wants to get released to go to a team, but might make more. Like, again, you can find that sweet spot where it just kind of makes sense for both sides. So I'm not sure if this was, again, just sort of deductive common sense from Albert Breer based on some of the things we've heard recently, or if he's reporting on it. But again, per Albert Breer, he states the most likely scenario as of now is that Jair Alexander returns to the Green Bay Packers on a reworked deal in some way. So we'll keep an eye on that as the Jair turns, spends another day continuing to turn. And yet we have no resolution or no sign of a resolution in the near future. But whether or not Jair is a member of the Green Bay Packers, I guess we'll know at some point, maybe sooner rather than later. But I asked Tommy, my producer on the radio, or no, maybe it was, I forget who I asked. Maybe it was Tommy. I think I asked something to the extent of what will we know first? The Jair resolution or an Aaron Rodgers resolution? Will it be Rodgers makes a decision or the Packers and Jair come to some sort of decision? I think I go Rodgers on this one. I think Rodgers figures it out quicker, but that's saying something too. You never quite know. It feels like we could get the Rodgers news at any moment, right? The schedule release is coming up. I wonder, I don't know. We'll see, but my guess is Rodgers we get to know soon. The Jair one, I have no idea. It could be tomorrow, today as you're listening to this. It could be a month from now, 2 months from now. I have no idea, but I'm going to say the Rodgers one actually happens first. All right, those are the news and notes from Thursday, and now we get to get into our deep dive of Baron Sorrell. Very interesting player, very intriguing player. Again, one that's caught the eye of a lot of Packers fans already, and rightfully so. He is already, again, kind of becoming this cult hero. Great jersey number choice, by the way, number 99. We can, you know, maybe say some of the other ones didn't fit quite as well. That one seems to fit him very well. Although 99, as we talked about, has been a little bit cursed. Corey Williams is really the last number 99 that kind of worked out, but Baron Sorrell is due to break that curse, I guess, if anything. Let's get into it. 6'3", 256 pounds, edge rusher from the University of Texas. Spent his entire time at Texas in college. He is a true senior, and he is 22 years old. He will turn 23 in December. From an athletic standpoint, a 9.31 relative athletic score, so a 93rd percentile athlete as an edge player. He did all the testing, didn't skip anything. 52nd percentile in height, 45th percentile in weight, a 92nd percentile bench press. A freaky, you know, dude when it comes to pure raw strength. 76th percentile vertical jump, 87th percentile broad jump, 90th percentile 40-yard dash with a 4.68 40, a 76th percentile 10-yard split, 80th in the short shuttle, 89th in the three cone, and then some of the other ones. 9% only arm length, 14% wingspan, 12% hand size. So a little bit shorter arms, wingspan, and smaller hands, which is noteworthy, and it does matter, even if we don't like to talk arm sizes and hand sizes and wingspan. Those things do come into play, especially as a pass rusher. Some of his athletic comps, these were from the relative athletic score site. Jason Babin, I haven't heard that name in such a long time. I had to include him just because it's been a hot second since I've heard that name. Jason Babin, Brian Robeson, the old Minnesota Viking, Kyle Emanuel, who actually was on the Packaday podcast at one time. I believe he was on with Andrew and Kyle, if I remember correctly, but Kyle Emanuel, and then Felix Anadike Uzomoa, who is a Kansas City Chief, and then Braylon Trice, Wyatt Ray, and Kylie Fitz on the mock draftable databases, some, you know, kind of comps for Baron Sorrell. So those are some athletic comps. Again, doesn't mean he turns out to be those sort of players, but if you can remember any of those are the sort of athleticism that Sorrell is working with here. All right, PFF. 54.9 grade on 93 snaps in 2021. In 2022, he had a 64.3 grade on 631 snaps. In 2023, a 73.7 grade on 587 snaps. And in 2024, a 74.5 grade on 715 snaps. Talk about it all the time. 54.9, 64.3, 73.7, 74.5. You love to see that consistent progression throughout his time in college. As far as a pass rush standpoint, in 2021, he had 45 pass rush snaps, one sack, three pressures, a 4.4% win rate, and a 6.7% pressure percentage. In 2022, had 391 pass rush snaps, seven sacks, 37 pressures, a 7.2% win rate, and a 9.5% pressure rate. In 2023, 357 pass rush snaps, three sacks, 43 pressures, 10.6% win rate, and a 12.0% pressure rate. And last but not least, in 2024, 398 pass rush snaps, 10 sacks, 54 pressures, a 14.8% win rate, and a 13.6% pressure percentage. Again, pressures, 3, 37, 43, 54. Better year over year over year over year. Win rate, 4.4, 7.2, 10.6, 14.8. Better year over year. Pressure percentage, 6.7, 9.5, 12.0, 13.6. Just a consistent progression for Sorrell throughout his time at Texas. Some interesting notes. Senior Bowl was an invitee, and he did attend the Senior Bowl. And maybe most importantly, he was voted the American team's top defensive lineman during practice at the Senior Bowl. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. It was an honorable mention all Big 12 in both 2022 and in 2023. Was a team captain for the last eight games of 2024. He did not miss a single game in the past three seasons. Not illness, not injury, not anything. He has been consistent with his health and has not had any injury or illness issues in his college career. Daniel Jeremiah had him rated as his 115th player on his big board, while the consensus big board had him at 143. Let's get to those strengths and weaknesses, kicking things off with the strengths. This is a big one, and I think it's important. And it actually made me a little bit surprised that maybe he didn't even go a little bit higher. I thought, and this checked out by him winning that award, right? I thought he was unbelievable in Senior Bowl practices and even played well in the game. Like, he looked awesome. He looked awesome doing one-on-ones and doing some of the team drills and the practices and the game itself. He just stood out in a real significant way going against the other Senior Bowl offensive linemen, guys that are there to prove themselves. He just was beating them over and over and over. And as good as he played, as well as he played in college, I thought that was a standout practice multiple times where in this, just to be clear, I wrote this down before I even knew he won that award for practice week. I saw like on the clips, just consistent winning. It was really, really impressive. And you could really get a eye on going against NFL level talent, just how impressive he was. I thought that was a huge thing for him. All right, yesterday I used an Anchorman reference. Today I've got a couple Matrix references for you. As Morpheus told Neo in the training program, he said, some rules are meant to be bent and others are meant to be broken. Well, Baron Sorrell is a little bit sneaky with some of the stuff that he does as a pass rusher. And let me just tell you, I love sneaky offensive linemen and pass rushers. Take every little advantage that you can get. And what I mean by the some rules are meant to be bent and others are broken, understand what referees are going to call and what they're not going to call. Something might be quote unquote illegal by the letter of the law, but if it's never called, then it's not illegal. You're not ever going to get in trouble for it. There's not ever going to be a penalty for it. So it really doesn't matter that it's illegal in the first place. This is the game within the game. Now, I'm not saying that Sorrell is doing anything egregious or anything like that, but he just uses a little bit of the opponent's jersey and a little couple tugs here and there from time to time to gain a little bit of an advantage. And to that, I say kudos, my friend. There's a play on tape, for example, and I saw this a couple different times, but one of my favorite plays of him is he had great hand usage, great footwork. He kind of gets outside, then uses great footwork to kind of get around the edge a little bit. And then his hands were super quick, super active, just kept the offensive tackle off balance. And then he just gets inside on the collar just a little bit and just tugs him just a bit, just a tad bit. That's going to just throw him a little bit off balance, get him a little bit off kilter, and almost kind of like propels him forward a little bit at the same time. Little pull this way, goes in, inside and gets that advantage and is able to get a pressure out of it. I love those little sort of things from defensive linemen. Never in a million years is that thing going to get called. Never, never in college, never in high school, never in the pros. Just a little tug as you're going by. You're not even going to see it if you're the official. It's going to look like he's just ripping through or like he's just kind of moving his hand through. Just a little tug, not a aggressive pull all the way down or anything like that. Just a little tug on your way through, a little momentum boost for you, a little momentum stoppage for him. Love those sort of things. So he's understanding how, again, some rules meant to be bent, others broken, and he's doing a really good job of that. I thought he got so much better at setting the edge throughout his time in college. You go and watch some of his early stuff, even 22, 23, and it's like, oh man, you could tell, and this is why when you're watching tape from a scouting standpoint, you're not looking at what they did, you're looking at what they can do. And this is such a great example just within college in and of itself. In 22 and 23, he was doing a bad job of it. But you could easily tell that he could do it, and he displayed it from time to time that he had the ability to do it. So as you're projecting, you're saying, all right, I can tell he has the ability to do this, and I believe he's going to be able to do a better job of it in the pros. That's what if he didn't have this last season and came out as a true junior, as I would have been evaluating him, I would have said, listen, his setting the edge is not good enough right now, but I don't have any real concerns that he can do it in the NFL. The truth be told, he played his senior season and it did get better and it was not an issue. And it does project, continue to project as something he should be able to do at a very high level. But I thought he really grew as an edge setter early on in his career. He got sucked inside so much, and it would just allow these explosive plays. I forget if it was Bama. There was a big game. I think it was Bama where they were going against, and he just got completely taken out of where he was supposed to be. And it's a huge run, and it was in large part due to his fault. And those were the things that in run defense just left you really concerned early on in his tape. And he got so much better at it in 2024. He does have some ability to move inside, to kick inside and kind of play more of like a three technique as a pass rusher on passing downs. They did that a little bit with him in 2024. And so that was a nice sign because previously had basically just been on the edges. But last year they did experiment with him and it went pretty well and really well on twists and stunts and those sort of things also. So he does have some maneuverability on where you can line him up both at the edge and maybe a little bit on the interior and some pass rush situations as well. Motor, effort, and rallying to the football. I posted a play over on Twitter. He's standing up, kind of backing up from his spot to kind of read the quarterback. It looks like it was going to be a read kind of play. And then they throw a wide receiver screen to the other side, and he recognizes it, gets over there, hustles all the way to the other side of the field on a sprint, on a dead sprint, and the receiver's going to go in for a touchdown. Made everyone else, you know, kind of miss, or the blockers got everyone out of the way. And bearing down on him comes Baron Sorrell and makes the stop. Otherwise, it would have been an easy walk-in touchdown. But because of his effort, energy, intensity, and his speed, quite frankly, as a defensive end, he was able to get there and prevent the touchdown. And you see it all the time. He is not afraid to rally to the football. He cares about the game. He cares about doing his 111th. And until that whistle blows to end the play, he continues to work hard and rally to the football, and he's going to fit in Jeff Hafley's defense very, very well for that exact reason. It shows a nice push-pull move. So again, a little bit of a push, then a pull. Kind of, again, same thing with the momentum, you know, pulling him forward, getting him off balance, and then for you kind of propelling you forward. It was his go-to move, and he got really, really good at it through his time at Texas. He's got very quick and active hands. His footwork shows real potential. I like what he can do from a footwork standpoint. Just even being able to kind of contort his body a little bit, especially for his size. Thought that was impressive, body control. But I think he can even get better at his footwork moving forward. But there are signs that it could be very, very good. Durable, dependable, reliable. We talked about he has not missed a single game in his college career. He keeps working even through double teams. This is another big one. How much have we talked about here that in right now in the NFL, you're going to get 3 to 4 hands on you as a pass rusher on pretty much every single play, or at least the majority of plays. So many tight ends are being kept in to chip or help on a block off, or running backs are helped to chip, or you'll see a guard that helps on one player, then helps on the other. And you end up with 3 to 4 hands on you on almost every single pass rush. And it's really easy to get discouraged by that because guess what? In the NFL, if you're one-on-one, you just have one offensive lineman in front of you, it is insanely hard to get to the quarterback. And now if you've got multiple people, even if it's a tight end just chipping or a running back coming in to kind of control where you can go, whatever it might be, an offensive lineman helping over, it's really difficult to get that momentum and start getting your pass rush plan going when there's, again, multiple hands on you at the same time or watching you or just not allowing you to do what you want to do. What I loved about Sorrell is that happened in college gym and he just kept working, just kept collapsing the pocket. He would get by that first guy. You know what? All right, now I get a second guy. Can I get past that guy? Just kept working and working and working. And sometimes it's a slow burn, but I appreciate the fact that it's not like, oh, I got two guys on me, stalemate, we'll call it even, don't really need to do much here. No, he kept working towards the quarterback to try to get that pressure. And more often than not, he did. Showed consistent growth while at Texas. We talked about that. Per his defensive coordinator, Pete Kwiatkowski, he said, quote, and this was out of order a little bit, but the multiple quotes, he said, he's no drama, great work ethic, and is the same guy every day. Again, Packers people, we talk about this all the time. Team captain, again, loved by his peers. Coaches loved him. That's what you're getting with Baron Sorrell. He's a weight room addict. He's a junkie. He's like all the tests, he just maxes out. He's got unbelievable upper body and lower body strength. It shows in the weight room as well. He had the fastest mile per hour rating in the hoop drill at the combine per Dane Brugler in his draft guide. And then the last but not least thing I'll say on the positives is he plays with tremendous play strength. Some things I would like to see him even do better, but you can tell he's got the raw strength in his upper body and his legs. He's full of muscle. He's still honing on how to use it, but he is built and he shows it off and he has plus play strength especially from a run defense standpoint. All right, let's get to those weaknesses. First one is he has inconsistent closing bursts to the football. I wanted to see him have that ability to get past the initial wave and then boom, get to the quarterback. And I didn't see it until I did. I wrote it down here. I think it was week 10 against Kansas State. I think it was in 2023, if I remember correctly. I don't think it was in 2024, but it was Kansas State game week 10. And that game stood out to me. I think that was the game where he rallied to the football and made that stop that I was talking about earlier as well. But I saw a real legitimate burst from him. And I'm like, what the heck? Where did that come from? But he was bursting to the quarterback. He was like, there was almost like a totally different gear to him in that game. So I saw it. That means he has it. That means he can do it. I didn't see it consistently. Far more often than not, he'd get around and it felt like it was taking forever for him to get to the quarterback. But I have seen it. My own two eyes. You can go check it yourself. Kansas State, I think it was 2023, week 10 game. He has three plays where he shows tremendous burst in that game. Two of them to the quarterback, one on that play I was mentioning earlier. I'm hopeful that that is something he can show a little bit more often, but it was very inconsistent while he was at Texas. He has all the strength in the world, but I do want to see him play with a little bit more violence. I think if he really gets that level of intensity and physicality and violence, I'm not talking like dirty violence or anything like that. Just want to see him really heavy-handed, really taking it to people because I think he has that ability. If he can just play, like I would be, as soon as I would get him in for the Packers, I'd be like, your first day here, you're just going to watch old John Randall clips, just angry pass rushing. I want that. Get him the eye black, get him anything he needs to do. Not that I want to prop up a Minnesota Viking here, but that type of anger and intensity, that's what I want him to play with. And if he does that, look out because he's got the size, the strength, the speed, the athleticism. He's got everything he needs. Now just hone it, you know, become the Sith that you're supposed to. Let the hate flow within you and just become a complete master of pass rush and violence. That's what I want to see out of Baron Sorrell. He's definitely built for the NFL. There are these pass rushers that you see, and I've talked about this on, a live show recently, of when you start watching players, you want the sizzle, you want the flashy plays, the sexy plays, the big time bend around the edge, the sacks, the, you know, the whatever it might be, a Euro step or like all these different moves, a spin move that gets to the quarterback. You want these big time quick plays, right? What you quickly learn is that you have to have the play strength to hold up at the point of attack, to even have the chance to get around some of these players. Like, those are non-negotiables in the NFL for the most part. You can have a couple specialists, and we probably are going to talk about one on our next deep dive. But in more often than not, regardless of the position, you better have some really impressive play strength, and he has it. So I really love that. I love that he's built for the NFL. And I'm telling you right now that I don't know why this is in my weaknesses column. This is supposed to be in my strengths column. So sorry for bringing you a random strength in the middle of the weaknesses. I meant to put it in the strengths one, but that is the strength, not a weakness. My apologies for that. He is built for the NFL. That's a good thing, not a bad thing. Control C, Control V, actually Control X, Control V, and we've got it in the right spot now. But built for the NFL, that is a positive, not a negative. All right, back to negatives. Maybe I have more positives in here. Who knows? That's just the type of player Baron Sorrell is. All positives, even his negatives are positive. All right, back to negatives. Struggles to hold up in the run game against double teams. That's something that he can definitely improve upon. I would argue pretty solidly that he's not super dynamic. And again, I just talked about those edge rushers that I love to see that have, you know, Donovan Ezeraku, right? Leatu Leatu. Like, I love watching those guys. I'm like, those are the guys I want. I want the guys that have that, you know, agility and that burst and different moves and all that stuff. A lot of times it's, again, the play strength, the physicality that you really win with. The Jared Verse. The Jared Verse was the player that turned out in last year's draft class. He played with great strength and great physicality. And to me, Sorrell has that great strength and physicality, but he is lacking a little bit of dynamic movement and dynamic playmaking. Something I wish he had a little bit more of, but I'm not concerned about it. I just wish there was a little bit more there. A little bit of stiffness in him. You know, when you're that muscular and built, there's going to be a little bit of that. But again, is it a deal breaker? No. And you will see him kind of bend around the corner from time to time. Not maybe as much as Oliver, which we're going to talk about, but still, he's got a little bit of it in there. I did feel like he fell off way too many tackles, especially in some opportunities to finish some sacks and things like that. But running back, some potential tackles for loss in the backfield, just didn't finish plays the way that I think he's more than capable of doing. So just has to get that cleaned up a little bit. As I mentioned earlier, early in his career, he got sucked far too often inside, he got distracted, if you will, way too much inside and did not kind of keep his spot and hold the edge. Like I said, he does a much better job of that, or did a much better job of that in 2024. I see that carrying over in 2025, but earlier in his career, that was a big problem. And then he does have short arms. We talk about all the time, like, it does matter in the trenches and just being able to kind of extend, keep those players away from you while you're kind of getting around the bend. It's not a deal breaker for him, but it is noteworthy. It is a negative nonetheless. Some other notes that we have here on Baron Sorrell. This is a shout out to Justice Mosqueda. He was the one that brought this to my attention and did a great job writing it up in his Acme Packing Company breakdown of Sorrell as well. Edge defenders who have met Baron Sorrell's height, weight, speed, and three cone. All right. So you have to be at or better than his height, weight, speed, and three cone. Trayvon Walker, LVN, Montez Sweat, Odafe Owe, Daniil Hunter, and Trey Hendrickson. That is a pretty impressive freaking group. Now, LVN is TBD, but Trayvon Walker maybe not lived up to that first round or first overall pick, but good edge defender. Montez Sweat's been great. Odafe Owe has been really good. Daniil Hunter's been great. Trey Hendrickson, one of the best defensive players in football. That is a good group to be a part of, and Baron Sorrell is in that group. Last but not least, we heard from Brian Gutekunst. We also heard this from Dane Brugler. Of all the Texas players that were asked, they were all asked of, like, which player would you bring with, the ones that are going to the NFL, which Texas player would you bring with you on your journey to the NFL? And every one of them mentioned Baron Sorrell, every single one. That is a pretty impressive, just accomplishment, for lack of a better term, of, like, his teammates wanted him with, a compliment, if nothing else. That tells volumes of who he is as a person and what his character is like. All right. What he can bring to the Packers in 2025, rotational defensive end, no question about it. Great competition for the rest of that group. Solid run defender and upside in developmental traits. Don't think he's going to come in as, like, a big time pass rusher or anything like that, but I do think he can be a rotational piece, and I think he can be a net neutral type player. And you might be saying, oh, great, they got a net neutral type player. As a rookie coming in as a rotational edge defender, net neutral is phenomenal. You will take that every single time. And then you grow from there. But that would be a great result in year one for a fourth round edge defender. And I do think he has every right to kind of be in that realm, or maybe even a slight positive. Some final thoughts here. My ultimate scouting report, if you want the drill down to like the tiniest minute detail that you possibly can get, he's just a good football player. Like, it, sometimes it's stupid and simple. In Baron Searle's case, it's just simple. He's a good football player. I don't think, or I don't know, it doesn't matter, but like, I don't necessarily see him evolving into a great football player. I don't see him devolving into a bad football player. I think he's just going to be a good, solid NFL player that you appreciate having on your team, that's going to be a net positive over time. Probably a, you know, sort of Kingsley Nigbari, a better version of Kingsley Nigbari, where not necessarily your go-to guy, not somebody that's maybe going to change the defense in any significant way, but he can go out there in any snap, ask, you know, you can ask him to do anything. He's just going to be a good football player. And Brian Gutekunst's MO has been able to find good football players almost anywhere. I think he found another one in Baron Searle. Tremendous value here in the fourth round. Because I, as much as that's what I think the outcome is, he has what he needs to be much better than that. If you told me he was a major breakout player at some point in his career, would not doubt it at all. Just think more likely he's just a really good football player, and that is totally fine. So tremendous value in the fourth. Here's my second Matrix reference. When Neo goes to see the Oracle, said, you got the gifts, kid. Don't know what you're waiting for. Maybe your next life or your second life or whatever she says. Something to that extent. Basically meaning like, hey, you've got all these gifts. You just have to do it. You have to walk the walk. You've got to go out and use them. And there's a little bit of that with Searle for me of like, you've got everything, kid. What are you waiting for? Maybe your next opportunity, I don't know. But like, he's good. He has everything he needs to be great. And I think he can be. And we saw some of those players that are on that list that have his height, weight, speed, three cone. There's a lot of great players on that list, including Danielle Hunter and Trey Hendrickson. I think he has that sort of upside slash athleticism slash ability. Now it's just, can you take it to that next level? There are times where the burst looked incredible. Other times it was like, oh, I don't know that I necessarily see it quite the same. There are times where the play strength was incredible. There's other times I'm like, ah, don't really quite see it. There are times where he sets the edge with aggressiveness and physicality. And other times where, again, he was getting, you know, moved inside far too often. There's one play where I saw him hold up on the edge against a double team, manipulate both of them with long arms on both sides, hold them up both so he didn't get pushed off, kept his other guy clean, and then was involved in making the stop on the play. Just big time stuff. He's got it. It's there. Just hope he finds it and utilizes it and really harnesses it, because there's so much there for him to be a really talented football player. And yes, I think he's going to be good, but I want him to be great. And I don't know what he's waiting for, but I think it's in there somewhere. And the great news is he's continued to progress. And that trajectory continues to go up, and hopefully that continues in the NFL. Last couple things. It takes a moment sometimes to appreciate his game. Like I say, just a good player. Doesn't have all that sizzle. Doesn't have the sexiness. Doesn't have the things that make you go, oh my God. He's like, unlike Savion Williams, where I'm like clipping every other play, like, you got to see this. You got to see this. With Searle, it's more of like, just good football. I could post it, but it's kind of, I don't even want to, like, kind of boring sometimes to watch him in a good way, because he just keeps doing his job over and over and over again, which is a really good thing. Last but not least, in the fourth round, you should not get a player that checks every single box. And when I talk about that, when we talk about checking every single box, like, we're talking about the main ones here, right? Productivity. He was a tremendously productive player, led the team in sacks at one point. His pressures continued to go up. He was a big time performer. The productivity was really good. He played at a big school, SEC, played at Texas, played in some big games. He's got that going for him. The athleticism. He's a what, 93rd percentile athlete at his position. The athleticism is fantastic. You have no questions about the athleticism. The character is great. I mean, the coaches rave about him. The players rave about him. They wanted to bring him with them. The character is great. by all accounts. He's had zero injury history, plays a premium position. He's 22 years old. He showed consistent progression every single year at Texas. He seems to really care about the game. He attended the Senior Bowl and tore it up. He checked every box. There's nothing left. There's 0.0% chance you should be able to get that in the fourth round. Just none. Where's the red flag? I don't see it. Short arms? Get out of here. Yeah, you can talk about it as being a negative. That shouldn't be the deal breaker. And I get it. He's not maybe the most dynamic guy in the world. He's not, but man, he checks every single freaking box. If you told me there was a player in this draft that had a 10 sack season, that was, you know, the production was fantastic, played in the SEC, high-end athlete, great character, unbelievable character, team captain, teammates loved him, zero injury history, played a premium position, 22 years old, consistent progression throughout his career, seems to love the game, attended the Senior Bowl and tore it up. What's his grade? I was like, that, it's a first-round guy. I don't think Sorrell was a first-round guy, but like, you do not get this type of player in the fourth round very often. Green Bay got a tremendous value here. Hopefully it works out. He's got everything he needs. Now it's just a matter of, can he put it together and become a really great Green Bay Packer? Friends, that's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I always appreciate you. We'll be back right back here tomorrow with an all-new episode. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, Dave McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Ataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, Jake Kohner, Carla Delgado, Willie Winkelsinkle, Jen Wright, Ian Hewell, and Matt Geiger. See you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.